seems to care. It's not a pretty picture we get of the suburbs. They're boring, mindless places, we're told, with cookie-cutter houses that all look the same. And suburban culture, well, there isn't any, except what you find at the local mall. But, you know, if those stereotypes are true, why do so many Americans choose to live in suburbia? City planner Tom Martinson has spent most of his life there, and he told Steve Paulson it's a great place to live. Martinson makes a spirited defense of suburbia in his book American Dreamscape.
The bottom line of it is, why do you live in a certain place? What is it that makes you happy? Now, for some people, living in a city with museums and high-rises makes them happy, and that's terrific. For other people, living in a tiny town with just neighbors and friends around makes them happy. Suburbs are something else. Obviously, when you see the number of people who are moving to the suburbs, over half of all Americans now live there. And when you read the polls, which almost universally among, you know, when they poll suburbanites, do you like living where you do? They have very, very high positives in that. You have to assume that they're getting what they want. It may not be a museum on the corner. However, even that is changing. If you look around, you see even high culture is filtering out into suburbia. You look at things like, well, take the Getty Villa Museum in Malibu, obviously a suburb of L.A. If you're looking at L.A. again, maybe to me the best museum is Norton Simon. That's in Pasadena. If you look at our great colleges and universities, think of names like Harvard, Stanford, and Berkeley. They're all in suburbs. All of these big city institutions, and if you count shopping, for example, and even restaurants, have moved out into the suburbs almost universally.
I was surprised to learn in your book that this has not always been the reputation of suburbs. Before World War II, really before Levittown, the suburbs had a great reputation among urban planners and architects.
Yeah, isn't that a fascinating thing? Way into the 20th century, the assumption was that a two-part city, as Sam Bass Warmer describes Boston, is the ideal, a place to work and a place to live. And that sort of meant, since all of the manufacturing and stuff was in the downtowns or the center of the core, that whether you were in the municipality or outside, the suburban experience was where everyone wanted to live. Then you had, since that was a high expectation, you had all of the greatest architects, landscape architects, planners were working on the suburban problem. That went all the way up through the war. And I'm talking now the Second World War. Mm-hmm. However, in the post-war period, don't even know how to explain it, but then all of a sudden, the tastemakers were saying that suburbs are bad, just the things we were talking about before. They're banal, and people who live there can't be too bright.
You're really talking about the intellectuals.
The intellectuals. But this, of course, is what you. This is what informs the media. This is what informs the sort of sense of the country. So what happened, for that reason, for others, the best of our designers, in most cases, went to work on large-scale projects, non-residential projects, downtown projects. And by the way, I'm not criticizing them. I would have done the same thing at the time. And what's happened then is that we've had a whole different type of group of professionals who have been doing suburbs. They've been technically competent, but not necessarily visionary. And one of the reasons then that we do not have, in my opinion, suburbs as good as they could be, is simply because we've been missing that creativity and imagination that was so clear in forming the suburbs prior to the war.
I want to play you an excerpt from an interview we did with one prominent critic of suburbia. He's James Kunstler, the author of The Geography of Nowhere, which I think sums up his take on this. And here's that bit of tape.
The suburbs will prove to be, in the next 25 years, an experiment that has failed. The classic automobile auto-dependent suburb is going to be viewed as an experiment that has failed. And this suggests that we are going to need a new blueprint for living in this country. We are going to have to return to some traditional patterns that we once knew how to do splendidly well, which we have either forgotten or thrown away. For example, the urban neighborhood, the classic small town, the rural village. Well, fortunately, there is a significant movement in this country, and it goes under the name of the New Urbanism, which is promoting the return to traditional principles of town planning and of building an everyday environment that really allows people to live happily and to have a civic life.
Okay, I'm guessing that you would not agree with that assessment.
if you look back at critics of the suburbs, and they've been few but loud in the last 40 years, they have always said that in the next 25 years, the next 10 years, the next generation, that the suburbs, nobody will like them anymore. The suburbs will be a failure in this case, he says, and others have said the same thing. Well, you know, this has been going on now for much longer than these predictions, and it isn't happening.
Well, this movement that he's talking about, the new urbanism, has been touted as the savior of urban planning. I mean, the idea is that fewer people want to live in the cities now. The suburbs are bankrupt, and so we need something else. And so there's this group of architects and designers who are trying to create something new, these very attractive sort of small-town environments.
Well, of course, they're not. The one thing to understand here, when you're talking about tradition, tradition doesn't mean to me, if I'm looking at American tradition, does not mean going back and copying something old. If you look at what's traditional about America, it's innovation. Whether the small town, whether the downtown, whether the prairie development, and what I think is lacking in here, in this new urbanism, is no innovation.
So the solution is not to bring back the front porch or to have alleys and back of the houses where you put the cars. And of course, the idea of the front porch is where people will be sitting out there and getting to know their neighbors, and the streets will be sort of small so cars can't go racing through there. You're saying that's not the solution.
Well, it's obviously so trivial. It doesn't deal with big issues like transportation and jobs and economics, et cetera. If you think that things are not good, or if you think that things could be better, which has always been the case in the U.S. and elsewhere too, then you try and come up with a new creative solution. This is not to me. I mean, this is like the bonbon at the end of a long dinner.
So why do you think people are so drawn to live in the suburbs? I mean, in spite of all the criticism from, as you would say, the intellectuals, more than half the country now lives in suburbs. What's the great attraction?
Oh, there's several. The main one after the war was that it was available. There was no real places to live in the city compared to the number of the growing population. Developments were occurring in the suburbs, and they weren't in the city, A. B, the ones in the suburbs were actually much less expensive to live in. You did initially have a little more cost in driving your car, but they were much less expensive. The third thing is that a lot of Americans, not all but many, like a little piece of land of their own. Doesn't have to be an estate, but it has to be something of their own, their home, and they aren't going to be happy living in an apartment. Fourth, and maybe the most important, I think, is that there's a suburban state of mind. And the suburban state of mind, at its worst, is sort of leave me alone. But you can kind of understand that there's a sense if you live in a big city, there's all kinds of rules, there's all kinds of hierarchies, and a lot of Americans, again, I can't say all, but many Americans tend to not react well to that. So the idea of being in a decentralized suburb, a little bit of space of your own, not so expensive, people leave you alone, makes a lot of people happy.
Now, one of the difficulties of this conversation is the danger of generalizing, and there are lots of different kinds of suburbs out there, and I'm willing to bet that you would say there are better suburbs and worse suburbs, and I'm curious about what you see as the best kind of suburb, if you could point to a few examples.
If you were talking about what's a beautiful suburb from a visual standpoint, then I look at pre-war, actually 19th century suburbs like Llewellyn Park outside of New York, just gorgeous houses sitting on kind of a vast estate. Riverside is one of the most celebrated right next to Chicago. After the war, to me, the very best is the Woodlands, which is north of Houston. It's based totally, almost totally on landscape as opposed to architecture, and it's wonderful. It's actually a whole town. It's like a new town. It was developed in the 1970s and designed by a very well-known landscape architect, Ian McHarg. The idea of that was to, A, base the town on landscape as opposed, as I mentioned, to architecture. And
so what does the landscape look like?
There's two things about it. One is they haven't, there was sort of a piney woods there, and instead of a lot of subdivisions, they just cut everything down and start over again. They cut the neighborhoods into the woods, which is, of course, really wonderful. The other thing which was very exciting was that McHarg took some really functional things. One of the big planning issues was something real mundane, flood control. And he took these facilities, like holding ponds and arroyos, and made them into just beautiful features, water features. So people go by and say, gee, this is just absolutely glorious. Actually, it's plumbing. But the ability to work with the land and do something innovative out of the functional requirements is one of those things I think is such an American characteristic, that we always come up with unexpected solutions when these new problems present themselves. So in both ways, Woodlands, to me, is just a paradigm of the American ideal.
Tom Martinson is a city planner and urban historian who lives outside of Minneapolis. He talked with Steve Paulson about his book, American Dreamscape: The Pursuit of Happiness in Post-War Suburbia.